evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Today is Sunday, February 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United States pledges more than $85 million in life-saving humanitarian assistance to Turkey and Syria after the massive earthquake in the region that has killed more than 25,000 people.
We will do everything we possibly can to fulfill the needs that the Turks have put forward.
Some leading political parties in Nigeria are optimistic they will do well in upcoming general elections and have intensified their campaigns.
Atiku Abubakar has assured Nigerians that he will launch a $10 billion US stimulus program that will revive the small-scale industries that will enable our youth to be gainfully employed.
And tension between communities at the South Sudan border with Kenya, as at least 13 people are killed and several others injured. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Rescue teams using thermal cameras to locate signs of life are continuing to pull survivors out of mounds of rubble. 5 days after a major earthquake struck a sprawling border region of Turkey and Syria. The death toll has now topped 25,000. Rescuers on Saturday pulled 5 members of one family alive from the wreckage of their home 129 hours after Monday's quake. At least 4 more people were rescued earlier Saturday. They included a 16-year-old and a 70-year-old woman. But not all ended well. Rescuers reached a 13-year-old girl inside the debris of a collapsed building in Hatay province and intubated her, but she died before medical teams could amputate a limb and free her. Meanwhile, the United States has pledged more than $85 million in life-saving humanitarian assistance to Turkey and Syria. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports, the U.S. Agency for International Development funding will go towards emergency shelter, food, water, cold weather supplies, and health care.
This VOA drone footage captures the scale and magnitude of the destruction of Monday's earthquake in Turkey and Syria. Relief efforts still include search and rescue operations. VOA captured video as rescue workers saved this 11-year-old boy and 3 other people on Tuesday in the Turkish city of Hatay near the Syrian border. The United States is ramping up its relief efforts. The U.S. Agency for International Development pledged more than $85 million in assistance after Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with his Turkish counterpart to ascertain their needs. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
I will leave it to the foreign minister and to our Turkish allies to speak to their needs, but the foreign minister did offer to Secretary Blinken some specifics. We will do everything we possibly can to fulfill the needs that the Turks have put forward.
Price confirmed that teams on the ground remain in an acute phase of search and rescue operations. The U.S. has dispatched 2 highly trained urban search and rescue teams as John Kirby, National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications, explained Friday at the White House.
These teams have nearly 200 personnel combined between them, specialized equipment and canine support dogs as well. They have been able to expand their operational reach with the support of U.S. military Black Hawk helicopters.
Kirby confirmed that the Pentagon is moving an aircraft carrier already deployed in the Mediterranean Sea closer to Turkey to respond as Ankara sees fit.
We're working in lockstep with our Turkish counterparts here to make sure that what we're providing is what they need at the scale and the speed that they need, and not trying to overwhelm their system with unneeded material or unneeded capabilities.
On Friday, a United Nations aid convoy crossed into Syria's rebel-held northwest from Turkey, the second UN relief delivery to the war-torn country. The United States has called on the Syrian government to allow humanitarians access to all survivors and is pushing for more safe passages for UN humanitarian aid across the Turkish border into Syria. Russia and China have said the crossing points are a violation of Syria's sovereignty. Cindy Sain, VOA News. VOA.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments, or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
At least 10 soldiers died in an ambush in southwestern Niger, close to the Mali border, by a group of what the defense ministry Saturday called armed terrorists. A ministry statement said the toll from Friday's attack could rise because 16 people were seen missing and 13 soldiers were wounded. The ministry said the troops were on patrol in the northern part of Baningu department, where they came under a complex ambush by a group of armed terrorists referring to Islamist extremist groups. The statement also said several attackers were killed during the fighting, but did not specify how many. The attack took place in Niger's vast western region of Taliberi, which straddles Burkina Faso and Mali, two countries hit by jihadi insurgents, and has faced repeated attacks since 2017 by armed groups linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. The region borders the Tahor area, where heavily armed attackers stormed a camp housing refugees from neighboring Mali last week. 9 people were killed in that assault, which a local official said was carried out by heavily armed terrorists on motorcycles who fled back into Mali. The UN says more than 61,000 Malian refugees shelter in Tahor and Taliberi. Years ago, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak surrendered power to the army, which pledged not to get in the way of a legitimate government. However, in 2013, the first democratically elected Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi, was overthrown by his defense minister, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who managed to change the constitution to extend presidential terms, and he expanded the army's role in all aspects of the economy. Joseph Sigo, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed this repeated model of coups with VOA's senior analyst, Mohamed Al-Shanawi.
Egypt is an indication of a case of militaries becoming politicized and then seizing power. And it's been a pattern we've seen growing in Africa. Outside of Egypt, we've seen similar patterns in Zimbabwe, Burundi, Algeria, South Sudan, Sudan, Chad, and Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso. So there's a large number of cases where this has been happening. And it often happens in stages, where first you may have a civilian authoritarian government, which needs to rely on the security services to repress domestic rivals. And this is often happening through a presidential guard or special forces unit. And these special forces are accorded, you know, special privileges. And in the process, these units, or in some cases, the military as a whole, becomes politicized. They see themselves as serving the interest of the individual patron or politician rather than the government or the constitution. And as they're drawn closer to power, it's not a big step for them then to conclude that they themselves can rule by displacing that leader or by stepping in when he becomes incapacitated. So, you know, this can be mitigated by upholding constitutional processes for succession. You know, often regional international actors are inclined to take an expedient route when a military seizes power or steps in after a civilian leader dies. And this tends then to encourage that military model. And in the process, it undermines the constitutionalism of that country. It undercuts the rule of law, which has longer-term political and security problems for that country as well as the broader region.
But this model is not recognized as a coup, so the international reaction is not as severe as the military coups. What's the way out of this?
To be clear, there are always a myriad of interest and influences involved whenever you see these transitions. Yet, if the mode of engagement is going to be to try to enhance constitutionalism and the rule of law and democratic government, then regional international actors need to try to be as consistent as possible. And, you know, in that way, they can promote better governance and send signals to military leaders that the seizing of power is not going to be a viable way forward. And I think often there's a short-termism that plays into these decisions where supporting or recognizing an extra constitutional seizure of power by a military leader, it's seen as a way of stabilizing the country, or it's seen as the smoothest way to move forward. And so there's a willingness to look away. But in fact, we see in almost every case, you know, military governments do a terrible job of governing. You know, economic performance declines, human rights records are often abysmal, and there tends to be more instability in these countries. Moreover, many military governments just aren't equipped to manage the economy or to govern effectively. And so we see a broader deterioration in the quality of life and stability for these countries. So, you know, the decision needs to be looked at, I think, in a more institutional way and from a longer term perspective. And by doing so and by being more consistent, it can create some positive incentives for better governance on the continent.
That was Joseph Sigo, Director of Research at African Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El Shanawi.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
A doctor says at least 57 people have been confirmed dead in days of clashes between anti-government fighters and Somaliland security forces in the disputed city of Las Anod, after local leaders said they wanted to rejoin the federal government of Somalia. The doctor directing a public hospital in Las Anod told the Associated Press on Saturday that more than 400 people were wounded in nearly a week of fighting. Authorities in Somaliland, a region that separated from Somalia 3 decades ago and seeks recognition as an independent country, announced a unilateral ceasefire on Friday night. But residents say skirmishes continue. Some leading political parties in Nigeria are optimistic they will do well in upcoming general elections and have intensified their campaigns. The top three presidential candidates have held their first major rallies, as Mike Mbonyi reports from Port Harcourt.
The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, has registered 18 political parties to contest the elections for president and the National Assembly, scheduled for February 25th. And March 11. But only three have been visible across the country as they hit the campaign trail: the ruling All Progressives Congress, the main opposition People's Democratic Party, and the Labour Party. With 17 days to go before balloting begins, all three have stepped up their efforts and their countrywide presence despite fuel scarcity and currency shortages, and all three say they are confident. The People's Democratic Party says its ideas of dealing with top issues, which include jobs for youths, security challenges, and the economy, have resonated with voters. Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson of former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, the party's presidential candidate. He spoke to VOA by phone.
Atiku Abubakar has assured Nigerians that it will launch a $10 billion US stimulus program that will revive the small-scale industries that will enable our youth to be gainfully employed by direct provision of credit facilities that will enable them to start their various locations and businesses.
The Labour Party says critics of the party are wrong when they claim it lacks the structure to win an election, claiming it has widespread grassroots support. Prince Favour Rubin is the vice chairman of the party in South Nigeria.
But we have the best structure today because the human are our structure. The market women that are suffering are our structure. The business that have gone out of school for 8 months without school are our structure. The people that are suffering in Nigeria are our structure. The workers of Nigeria are our structure. So our structure is so large that they are even afraid.
The ruling All Progressives Congress says its hard work will bring success. Victor Giadom is the vice chairman of the party in charge of the south zone of the country.
Well, the All Progressive Congress, like you know, we have put in a lot of effort by reaching at our people at the respective units and wards in the country, especially in River State where I come from. I'm sure you will be aware that in 2019, the All Progressive Congress was on the ballot in the River State, and that burning desire has been in us for a very long time.
Giadom says the party's presidential candidate, Bola Tinubu, is a tested Democrat who has the credentials to meet the needs of the people. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
The Voice of America is honoring World Radio Day, recognizing the important role radio plays in engaging, educating, and informing diverse communities across the globe. Radio remains one of the most trusted and used media in the world, helping to influence ideas, open dialogue, and shape public opinion. The Voice of America is proud to be part of that process. This year's theme is Radio and Peace, focusing on radio's ability to help moderate conflict and promote peace.
Rising tensions continue to heighten between the communities at the South Sudan border with Kenya. These as authorities in South Sudan's eastern equatorial state say at least 13 people have been killed and several others injured in the region, and the border post has been closed. Maik Ayi Deng, the South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, says in a statement issued Thursday that the highest levels of government are aware of the sensitivities at the border and are working with Kenya to ensure peace, prosperity, and the maintenance of border integrity. Dengai Deng files from Juba.
The commissioner of Kapoita East County, Abdallah Angelo, says at least 13 people have been killed and several others injured since the clashes erupted last week between some members of the Turkana community of Kenya and the people of Kapoita East last week. Angelo says tensions remain high at the border towns of Nadapal and Narkodok.
As the commissioner here, I am now not able to control the situation. It was the other side that started the fighting because the governor of Turkana West and the minister of interior of Kenya came about 2 weeks ago and declared that Nadapal, Narus, and Nakodok are payams belonging to the countries of Kenya. That is what caused the conflict, and people became angry because who gave them those areas? That territory belongs to South Sudan. It doesn't belong to Kenya.
Commissioner Angelo says the border post has been temporarily closed due to the ongoing clashes. He urges the national government in Juba to intervene.
We want our national government to come in to protect its people and to protect its borders, to protect the border of South Sudan from the people who want to extend that border to the South Sudan land. Let them bring the papers of 2009, which they claimed was an agreement that allowed the presence of their soldiers in Nadapal to provide security. Now they claim that the area belongs to them. They have grabbed our water points and grazing land for our cattle.
Eastern Equatoria Information Minister Patrick Oting says some security forces from the state have been deployed to defuse tensions and protect civilians.
Our forces are already on the ground there, and they stay through the directive of the governor. So they have done the best, and currently I'm talking that the border it is under control. Currently, as we are talking, the national government is working on it, and sooner or later you will be hearing what the national government have done.
Last week, hundreds of Kapoita East County residents peacefully demonstrated after Kenya deployed soldiers on South Sudanese territory, claiming that the border between the two countries is in the Narkodok area of Kapoita East County. Mayik Ayiding, South Sudan's Minister for Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, said Thursday the highest levels of government are aware of the border clashes and are working with Kenya to maintain peace and border integrity. Deng said he met with the Kenyan ambassador to South Sudan and discussed areas of mutual concern. On Wednesday, while presiding over the swearing-in ceremony of newly appointed government officials, President Salva Kiir asked the new senior presidential advisor on special programs, Benjamin Bolmel, to improve South Sudan's relations with Kenya. Our relations are tarnished around the world. As you take up your new assignment, go and normalize our relations with Kenya, especially the recent tensions along the border corridor, the president said, according to a statement from his office. Kenya's Nation newspaper quoted the country's Foreign Affairs Principal Secretary, Korir Sing'oei, as saying that Kenya had not entered the territory of South Sudan. In that quote, Kenya respects the territorial integrity of all her neighbors and has not encroached on any of their territories. A boundary delimitation process of all borders under the AU is ongoing and is being conducted consultatively and jointly with our neighbors, end quote. The Nation newspaper reported Thursday that South Sudan's Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, Deng Dowding, said Kenya and Uganda are both claiming part of the South Sudan border area and that Juba will not cede any inch of the territory. There are reports that Juba has reported Kenya and Uganda to the African Union over their late border encroachment, in a row that could unsettle the East Africa Community Trading Bloc if it escalates. For VOA News, I am Deng Gading in Juba.
In Namibia, families of victims of genocide committed by Germany are calling for direct talks with the European nation to resolve their demand for reparations. They had earlier rejected an agreement between the governments of Namibia and Germany, where Germany had agreed to pay over $1 billion in projects for more than 30 years for the reconciliation and reconstruction of the communities affected by the Nama Herero genocide of 1904 to 1908. Now, traditional leaders of the Nama and Herero people plan to launch a legal challenge seeking to nullify the agreement between Berlin and Windhoek. But local reports say the government plans to defend the deal in court. For more reaction from the families of the victims of the genocide, VOA's Peter Klote reached Professor Mushinde Kashewa, the paramount chief of the Herero people in Namibia.
We have said, look, nothing about us without us. We shall continue fighting until we are at the table to negotiate what is due to us. And in fact, the Hereros and Namas are transnational entities. We have Hereros, Namas in South Africa, Botswana, and Hereros also in Angola, and a lot of Hereros in the U.S. and Canada and the United Kingdom. If this negotiation is between two governments, Namibia and Germany, then it excludes what would be a reparation for Hereros outside the borders or outside the jurisdictions of these two countries. They intentionally excluded those in the diaspora and also intentionally, purposefully ensured that we are not at the table.
But Prof, if it is not government to government, how sure are you that the prospect of negotiating directly with the government in Germany will be beneficial to your people?
As an interested party, we'll facilitate the negotiations. That's exactly how the motion of or resolution of 2006 read, or still reading. So an Namibian government is supposed to facilitate, but we the victims, ourselves or through our chosen representatives, have to be at the table to negotiate. It has happened before with the State of Israel and 23 Jewish groups across the world when they negotiated with the government of Adenauer in the 50s, a tripartite arrangement. So that is possible.
The government has been negotiating with the German government for some time now. A lot of efforts have been put in place. The German government came up with some form of reparations, as they declared it. You rejected it and you rejected the proposal. So what's next after this latest call?
Now that we have filed a lawsuit here in the courts of Namibia, that whole joint declaration, that agreement is on ice. It cannot move, it cannot be implemented until the court processes are completed. And we're calling for a refreshment, a restart of the negotiations.
But how feasible is this call for a restart of the negotiations?
It is very feasible because the laws are clear. We have a National Assembly resolution that says the victims of genocide must directly negotiate with the facilitation of the Namibian government. And that, in the Namibian context, it is the expression of the Namibian people and the democratic expression of the Namibian people that is now violated by the executive. So that is not in line with the law. That's an unlawful process. And then when this joint declaration, this agreement, came to Parliament for ratification last December, when the opposition party and everybody and all the persons, most of the individuals in Parliament, saw that this was a raw deal, realized that the communities are up in arms, demonstrated against it, they were not ready to vote for it. But it was brought for voting. A process of Parliament means when it is brought for voting, it must be voted on. Divide the House, a yes or a no. But what did the Speaker do? It noted the discussion and filed the debate for further consultation. So that is a deviation from the procedure of Parliament. That's an unlawful application of a different procedure that is not applicable to this case as it was brought for a ratification. That's one thing. The second, we have rights in this matter to discuss for ourselves. We have domesticated these international protocols or law or conventions. Now, when the Namibian government deviates from that, it is in contravention of the decision of government, of our constitution, that we domesticate those laws.
That was Professor Moshinde Kashewa, the paramount chief of the Herero people in Namibia. He was speaking with my colleague, Peter Klote. The Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, sports. A commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. And Now in Northern Africa sports, let's go to Abuja and join Samson O'Malley. Hey, Samson.
Hi, Douglas, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin with Africa's elite club football competition, the CAF Champions League. The first round of matches in the group stage saw exciting matches played across various venues this weekend with some surprising results and dominant performances. Raja Casablanca made a bold statement about their intention this season as they opened the account defeating Uganda's Vipers of Uganda 5-0. Horaya of Guinea defeated Tanzania Simba 1-0. CR Belouizdad of Algeria registered a 1-0 away victory in Cairo against Zamalek of Egypt, while Osporans of Tunisia secured a 1-0 win over Al Merrikh of Sudan. In Group A, Petro de Luanda and Kabylie played out a goalless draw, with neither side able to break the deadlock in the tightly contested match. In South Africa, former CAF Champions League title holders Mamelodi Sundowns settled for a narrow 1-0 home win against Osporans of Tunisia on Saturday. And now to basketball. Basketball African League champions Tunisia's Union Sportive Monastery were thrashed by 2022 Basketball Champions League winners Lenovo Tenerife of Spain 112-42 points in the FIBA Intercontinental Cup semifinals. Tenerife will face Sao Paulo in the final, while the Tunisians will be against Brazil's Rio Grande Valley Vipers on Sunday in the third-place playoff. Pantelis Graville is U.S. Monastery head coach.
The lack of aggressiveness we had today was probably for many reasons. So the big stage, 20-25 days without the game, and some problems with the last-minute additional players in the roster, and lack of big guys, but still we could be much more aggressive and consistent.
And out to netball. One of Africa's representatives to the Netball World Cup, Uganda's She Cranes, who will be taking part in their fourth World Cup and making the third consecutive appearance, are in Group D alongside New Zealand, Singapore and Trinidad and Tobago. The Netball World Cup is being hosted by South Africa and is expected to run from the 28th of July to the 6th of August 2023. The Ugandan national netball team is struggling to start training and financial constraints, among other challenges. Sarah Nkonge, former patron of the team, explains.
And one of the problems I've discovered is there is no money, lack of accountability, poor governance, losing of the best international players. The players are not well paid. There is a problem. And until we put our house together, we still have a challenge of losing even to the weakest team in the World Cup.
And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Douglas.
Thanks, Samson.
Stay engaged with VOA Africa. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, comments or greetings. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in times of conflict and in times of peace. Here is one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. When the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa delivered his State of the Nation speech last week, he was interrupted several times by opposition parliamentarians. But when order was restored, he laser focused on the serious problem that have bedeviled South Africa for a long time. He referred to this problem, the electricity problem, as a national disaster. And how true it is. Already, there are reports that the wine industry in South Africa, which is popular abroad, is encountering serious problems. This year, the harvest is very good. but attempt to get out the juice for the wine is a problem. The load sharing exercise, which is going on now in South Africa, could not be much of a help. So the industry have to resort to getting other means for energy, generators, which are also very expensive and may negatively affect the competitiveness of South African wine abroad. What the president proposed, that he would resolve the matter by appointing a minister in his own office and try to resolve the issue. The response of the public was not positive. They felt the issue should be tackled by a national technical committee of scientists to have more accurate way of dealing with the problem. As all many may know, the issue of power in South Africa have been very long, going back to 2015. But unfortunately, the low-hanging bogeyman fruit has always been that the problem of power in South Africa is due to ANC corruption and a low-maintenance culture. No, it is bigger than that. And what one is seeing in South Africa is also affecting many African countries. The attempt to find the corruption angle has also been affecting many African countries. What is necessary in Africa is for all the states to put as much emphasis now on power shortage. There's also now a clear recognition that Africa cannot develop until it is able to provide a good power base. We are seeing all around us, even in Germany, a major industrial power. Because of power shortages, they are closing down some of their industry. So this should be not only South African problem, but a continental problem. For too long, many African countries have relied on generators just to go by. But generators are available only to few. The middle class and the poor cannot afford generators because they are very expensive to operate. So the challenge now is for many African countries to either proceed the way Ethiopia is proceeding with its Grand Renaissance Dam, or the way Tanzania has done by the inauguration of a new dam. Private industry cannot be much of an help, but you cannot establish an industrial base in Africa because private investors are not going to be interested if they cannot have guaranteed power production. So this is what one has to look for now. Will this be done individually by African states, or is there going to be a collective approach to the problem? The matter is urgent. What is clear now is that if African states want to avoid the present dilemma of Africa, which is a disaster, they must, at this stage, renew the approach to find a better solution to electrification of the continent. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
It's Sunday on Let's Learn Africa, and this is the time we get relaxed and reflect with the music from the continent.
Running out of things I can prove myself. Way too busy winning, I'ma lose myself. Every day they go hit on us. Mama says she gon' pray for us. Cause I can't do it on my own. You that godly, special somebody I know. You beside me, turn this house into a home. In the wrong places, yeah. Cover the front page on a Sunday when they discover a location, yeah. Cover the combination, yeah. All I need is a little patience, yeah. Takes guts, yeah, to break up, key to make up this foundation. Talking about real life, where you do the right thing and it still don't feel right. Set the bar real high, you the broken heart but you got a zero chill type. Why you gotta be like this every single time? How many breakups we gon' have? You even made me a plate when I pull up at your place to bring your fish back. Even my ex called me a big fan. Give me your time frame, I got big plans. But I don't buy face, I buy sick bags. Jet lag and smoke zigzags. The right way to play this bag. Running out of things, I can prove myself. Way too busy winning, I'ma lose myself. Say she gon' pray for us, cause I can't do it on my own. You that godly, special somebody I know. You beside me, turn this house into a home. Give me one good reason why opinions are so. Yo. I'm busy praying for a miracle. You was even in my video. See, I wanted you for a long time. Couple years later, now you're all mine. Star sign. Don't give me the cold shoulder like frostbite. Keep it outside. X6 got four bites. Go six, that's smoke bright. They need an angle for their website. But we just living our best life. Gold chains tangled on my chest like. We show up at the thing, you get the check right. Way too independent for your own good. Maybe that's the reason we started the season up on the wrong foot. Had to be strong, even your mom would. Recommend reading the love book. I need 100%, this is the last push. I just want to jog your memory. Please forgot I fought you and me. Paid the cost to follow our heart's energies. Now all of a sudden my chick wanna leave. All of our fans is gonna grieve. All of our haters is gonna preach. Running out of things, I can prove myself. Says she gon' pray for us, cause I can't do it on my own.
body sweeter than turkey. Slowly roll it down like those feet. No, they take on far from me. Shorty go down, down for me. Waiting go so far, now money. Girl, nobody sold on me. You're too short, enter for me.
Another fight for my life, it's alright, because everything dies, nobody know why. What can I go do? What can you go do when you're feeling like you're falling and you can't find nothing to hold on to?
Sunday Music Spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.